All of my competitors are also my best friends. Thoroughly enjoy spending time with everyone, but I love when it's time to race. We race each other, you know, and push each other to the absolute limit. I'll always say sorry and please. And I think everyone on the team would do the same, you know, try and be polite, but we're also, we're all out there to win a medal.
Welcome to Hidden Champions. My name is Dani Erovich, two-time U.S. Paralympian, and I'm excited to bring you this show alongside FIS, where we discover the best athletes you've never heard of yet. You're going to hear about them soon. And today, I am so excited because we have one of the biggest, baddest snowboarders in the para-snowboard game. He is a Paralympic champion from the Great White North of Canada, Tyler Turner. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
Do you like that intro?
Yeah, it's an epic intro. Yeah, no, that's epic. Yeah.
Hell yeah. If you were giving your own intro, what would you say about yourself to hype yourself up?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. I'm not one to hype myself up. I just like doing my thing and I have a lot of fun doing it. I don't know. I guess that's not very exciting.
I like doing my thing and I have fun doing it. Well,
yeah.
We are in the midst of the FIS World Cup season. Even before we get to the Olympics and Paralympics, we got World Cups to go to. So where are you right now and what do you have coming up this week?
Yeah, I'm in Lenk, Switzerland, and we just finished a bank slalom World Cup in Kutai, Austria. And now, yeah, we get to do my favorite discipline, snowboard cross in Switzerland. And this is such a great event. It was its first time, this event in Lenk last season. And they put on an absolutely first-class event. So I'm looking very forward to our second time racing World Cup here.
Hell yeah. And will you eat some fondue while you're in Switzerland?
Funny enough, my coach today, actually I'm dealing with a bit of a leg issue right now. So I wasn't able to go to official training today, which is really frustrating. But when my coach came back and I went to go do some video review with him, he is sitting out on his balcony with a little raclette and like making cheese on his patio. So yeah, he knows how to do it. And we're lucky we get to steal a little bit of that off him.
Ugh. I love that. Switzerland, you know, it's hard, I think, sometimes coming to these places as an athlete because I want to enjoy all the other things that Europe has to offer, mm-hmm. like the cheese, like the chalet life, like the wine, but we do
the
actually
chocolate.
Have to compete and keep that as mm-hmm. the focus.
Yeah.
You've been doing this now for several years. How much are you on the road realistically each season that you're competing?
Yeah, this will be my second games coming up. So about 6 years, I think now I've been on the team, and you know we're on the road a ton with the team competing, training. But then outside of that, just the life I live, I'm on the road about 8 months out of the year, maybe nine. Whether that's work, whether that's you know training, and or whether that's playing and recreation. I don't spend a whole lot of time at home and it's kind of a bummer. I bought a house last year and I've barely been home.
Oh, your house probably misses you. And it's like, please stop traveling so much so you can spend time. Coming into your second Paralympics, you were a new face in Beijing. So how did you even get initially started into the sport of para snowboard?
Yeah, Beijing was crazy. It was like kind of pretty quick after my accident and like, I've been snowboarding my whole life. I made a living at it before my accident, and whether that was competing when I was younger, and then working towards guiding certifications, and working building snowboard parks in snowcats, and operating snowcats for backcountry operations, and it's just snowboarding has kind of been my life. It's been my job, my passion. It kind of consumes my winters. And so after my accident, which was a skydiving accident in 2017, that I was actually recovering from for multiple years and had a second leg amputated a year and a half later, it was quite the ordeal. It was always the goal to get back snowboarding. And like the para snowboard competition scene wasn't really on my radar. I just wanted to get back riding powder, and I figured that riding park again was probably not going to be super possible, or at least the level that I had hoped that I would get back to. And when the Parasnowboard snowboard cross thing kind of started coming on my radar, I didn't know if it was for me. I was never a racer, and also didn't know a lot about the Paralympics. Like, I feel a lot of able-bodied folks, you know, have that same story. And I was worried it was going to be more of a participation ribbon than competition. And when I started diving into it, and as the years went on in the hospital, I, you know, paying attention, watching past Paralympics, and really following, like, you know, the big names in para snowboard, the Mike Schultz, the Noah Elliotts, the Chris Vosses, the, you know, the Japanese team, Junta and Daichi, like just powerhouses in the sport. I'm like, holy smokes. Like, this isn't a joke. You know, these are people devoting their entire life to training, to being at the top level in their sport and competing for their country and competing for gold medals. And that was like kind of a light bulb, like, okay, this isn't a joke. Also watching them on, you know, YouTube at the time, now we finally have it on primetime, but watching them snowboard, it was like, oh man, I can't beat them. You know, like this is high level competition and pushing it hard. So that's what kind of got me sucked in, is this like, okay, it's not just show up and we have fun and everyone high fives and everyone's happy. It's like, yeah, you need to devote your life to training and and pushing yourself to be on the top of that podium. And yeah, when I finally came around to that, I'm not one for moderation. And when that decision was made, I was all into a excessive level, as I generally do with most things in my life.
I've heard a similar story from some people who did acquire their disability later in life when they first heard about parasport. There is sometimes this assumption of it might be less elite than what I did when I didn't have my disability. Is it recreation? But it does, after you watch it and learn about it, demand that level of respect. And you understand, oh shit, no, this is a career. This is a professional sports career, not, as you said, show up, compete, have fun. It's very serious. There's rivalries and tension and people who are masters at this. And that's really cool that you took the time while you were still deciding to do that deep dive of research and understand the competition and how much you'd have to commit in order to make this possible. So how do you go from making that decision while you're still in the hospital, like, I'm going to give this a go, to fast forward Beijing, you're winning gold in snowboard cross?
Yeah, well, even to tighten that timeline up more, it was about a year after I got out of the hospital. So it was like about 2020. And obviously COVID. So when I made that decision, I'd already been snowboarding with my friends and stuff, and I was getting back riding the park, riding powder. And then that's when I did the deep dive and decided I wanted to pursue it. And so being a, you know, just COVID, getting classified was like very difficult. And I was able to get to the States for a classification that they were holding even during COVID times, and quarantined on my way there, quarantined on the way back. It was like a 1 month process for being a double amputee. There's not many questions of where I classify. So I walked in and they said, okay, yep, LL1, double amputee. And I said, can you like measure or something, like make this longer? Cause I'm going to have to go quarantine for 2 weeks. And like, I want to make it worthwhile that I came down here. But, yeah, there was only one opportunity for a World Cup that year. It was in Italy. And I barely trained. My coach, who, you know, I'd only been to a couple camps with and had, you know, a few emails back and forth, he said, here's the opportunity. We can get you in a wild card spot and, you know, potentially get some points because next year is the Paralympics. And so we went to Italy, and I kind of just Hail Mary ripped my first World Cup. I had no clue what I was doing. I didn't know how it all worked, qualifications and everything. I was literally giggling in the start gate every time, just like, what am I doing here? You know, like, I
what am I doing with my life?
Yeah, when I made it to the big finals, I think they all thought I was a crazy person because I was just laughing. Like, I should not have been standing where I was standing. And I think in the first season, that's what, which was right up to the Paralympics, so that's what gave me an edge, is I just didn't care. Like, it was all bonus. And I would shake my head every time thinking, like, what am I doing here? You know, how did I end up here? And yeah, it was a very quick introduction to the sport. And and then the Paralympics were, like, you know, 16 months away from that first World Cup.
Wow. I actually am pretty similar. My first World Cup was the spring of 21 in cross country skiing, to then go about, yeah, just a year and a couple months later to my first Winter Paralympic Games.
Crazy.
How do you think, though, you grew up snowboarding, you spent a lot of time on a board in different scenarios, but how does those skills, when you also had both of your legs, translate from skiing pow with your buddies, maybe, to now you're doing very technical snowboarding on a big slalom course? Do any of those skills you feel like translate, or were they able to show up again for you when you started this journey?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I've just been snowboarding and I love snowboarding. I've done so many different disciplines, whether it's half pipe or slope style or just, you know, rails in the street, filming with friends or riding powder, like all those things, they're just snowboarding in the end. And I've also been an instructor when I was younger. And so I've done the CASI program, where you're really learning the technique of how to turn a snowboard and different ways to turn. And all that after my accident, where I, you know, ended up a double amputee with a back end brain injury, I think it just stayed autonomous. Even though I didn't feel what's happening below my knees, I could just remember how it did feel and kind of drop into that. When I'm riding a track, I can visualize as well as actually, like, feel it in real life, what's about to happen and how I should react to that based on, you know, 25 years of snowboarding before my accident. So I think that has been a huge advantage for me, is that I just go off the memory of what I know it feels like. And with the technology of prosthetic feet these days, crazy enough, like Mike Schultz, you know, one of my biggest rivals, but also one of my best friends, you know how that goes, but he invented a foot probably 10 years ago now, if not maybe a little longer, that absolutely changed the game in snowboarding. And with that foot, it feels so natural that I just ride the way that I used to snowboard for the most part. And it works.
BioAdapt, for anyone who doesn't know, Mike Schultz created a prosthetic knee, a prosthetic foot to go in to snowboard boots and to help athletes who don't have a knee also be able to snowboard as well. And it's so cool to see that he's competing, but also all his competitors are on this product he created out of a need, because it wasn't available for him. And when he started his snowboard career as an amputee, he saw this lack of available devices that would work with it for him and for everyone else who was trying to do this elite level snowboarding, and he created it. And now it's so cool to see that everyone, like, globally is on the BioAdapt.
Yeah, the BioAdapt Moto Knee and the Versa Foot they revolutionized not just snowboarding but sport. And I think he actually initially came up with them for motocross, so it's like a byproduct that it worked really well for snow sports. But now you see it everywhere in the amputee community with weightlifting and mountain biking, dirt biking. You know, I wear it when I snowmobile in the backcountry. It's an incredible piece of equipment, and it's really cool that I get to race against the godfather, the inventor, the mad scientist who, made us all better at what we do. And it's because of Mike Schultz, the sport's been taken to the level it's at. I think there's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. It's at such a crazy high level. I mean, you look at the track we're on here in Lenk, Switzerland, it's just a snowboard cross track. It's the one that's been sitting there. It's not a para snowboard cross track. It's just the track they ran, you know, a youth event on it last week. There's NORAMs get run on it. And it's pretty cool that we're able to do that because of the BioDAP feet and knees.
We love you, Mike Schultz.
Yeah.
We owe you a lot for our Paris snow sports space. So this track, you say people, you know, are riding this at other elite level competitions. For someone who's never seen Paris snowboard before, there's two disciplines, snowboard cross and bank slalom. So what are your courses like compared to the Olympic side? Are they pretty similar? How did the disciplines compare to the Olympic side? Give us a little bit of a rundown there.
Sure. So bank slalom is specific for para. On the able-bodied side, they have giant slalom is a speed discipline, and it's separate from snowboard cross. It's a little bit, gets a little bit confusing there, but yeah, we've kind of combined these two different disciplines that are different athletes in the able-bodied world. A snowboard cross racer generally doesn't race giant slalom and vice versa. So for para snowboard, it's awesome because it's bank slalom is like a kind of like a core snowboard thing that's just been in the snowboard community for a long time. And now that's been turned into, for para snowboard, it's been turned into a Paralympic, you know, FIS level race. And it consists of multiple banks, left, right. Generally, it is one way, then the other way. Some tracks will have a bit of a deviation in them, but it means that there's big berms and the walls are shaped to be, you know, more vertical, like a skateboarding bowl, if you will. And it's awesome because it adds this extra element of like flow and style in a way. And it kind of feels like skateboarding, which I thoroughly enjoy. And then on the other side, we've got snowboard cross, which the bank slalom, you're running independently for time. And for snowboard cross, you're qualifying for time. And that puts you into brackets where four people leave the start gate at the same time. There is a start section, which is generally some whoops and wu-tangs and ups and downs. It's more technical. Then the speed starts to increase as you get into the berms and jumps and rollers, and every track's different. And some are more technical, some are more speed. Here in Lank, Switzerland, we've got a lot of speed, which is awesome. And four people, it's like, you know, it's like car racing on snowboards downhill. It's exciting. It's kind of scary. It's an awesome spectator sport because it's simple to understand. The first two to cross the finish line advance, the other two go home, and that keeps going all the way to the finals. And then in the finals, it's first cross the finish line wins, and second and third behind them are silver and bronze. And the fourth person didn't quite pull it off. So it's a simple sport for spectators, which I think is awesome.
Definitely. And snowboard cross is what you won your gold medal in Beijing. So it's chaos. Like I've seen people cross boards, take each other out. What goes through your mind while you're in a snowboard cross race and you have these competitors around you and you're A, trying to get down the fastest, but B, hoping no one screws you up by crossing your board or something? What's going through your mind?
I mean, I would assume it's different for everyone. I love speed. I love adrenaline. I love the excitement of racing with other people on the track. I am, without a doubt, a snowboard cross specialist. I do not do very well in bank slalom. I really struggle with it. Whereas snowboard cross, it's where I'm comfortable. It's what I enjoy. I love the excitement of other people, there's this extra element of tactics and gameplay and, you know, where are you going to pass? How are you going to pass? If you're out front, how are you going to defend? It brings this extra element of racing as opposed to just go down, be the fastest. And I really love that. There's a lot of unknown. There's a lot of variables. And like you said, there's a ton of chaos, which is awesome. I mean, you never want to see anyone get hurt, but the crashes are intense, and that's what keeps the energy extremely high, the adrenaline high. And I think that's why most of us show up for it. It's because that excitement is, you can't, you can't buy it.
How do you play offense and defense in snowboard cross?
I mean, it's line choice. There's absolutely offense and defense in a snowboard cross track. Maybe I'll leave it at that so I don't give away all my secrets.
And everyone needs to tune in and watch and try to figure it out for themselves. And mm-hmm. how much do you think equipment plays into it and your wax on your board or the type of board you're using? This is also from someone who's not a snowboarder trying to understand.
Yeah, equipment is huge. I think with any sport, for the most part, equipment's huge. Wax techs are as important a member as your team, as the rider, really, and your equipment that you're on. We talked a ton about BioAdapt, obviously, which I would say most amputees are using in the snowboard world, almost all. I think there's only a couple not. And then it comes down to boards, which moderately standardized because there's only a handful of companies that make race boards for snowboard cross. It's a pretty specific snowboard. And so there are like the big companies, there's four or five companies and then some smaller ones. I'm lucky enough to have grown up riding Kindred Snowboards. It's a Canadian company. And they, after my accident, they'd never made race boards and they were really interested in making race boards. And over the last 6-7 years of riding these boards, I would put them up beside any of the top brands. And I'm lucky enough that the owner's a good friend of mine and also the shop is about 10 minutes away from my house. So it's been a lot of fun to be able to tweak and play with it over the years. And I mean, I have stacks of race boards as we tried to figure out the fastest board. And a half a second is an eternity. And if you can find, a 10th of a second out of a snowboard, it's a game changer. So I've been really lucky to be able to work with a manufacturer like very one-on-one personally. And now the entire Canadian team is actually on Kindred Snowboards. So it's cool. Kind of a cool little thing. I don't know. People are going to catch on one day and then
I'll start buying them.
Maybe.
Exclusive partnership with the Canadian Paris snowboard team. Sorry, everyone else.
Right? I'll tell them shut it down. We don't want them out there.
That's sweet, though, to be involved in the R&D process of your actual snowboard is probably pretty A, unique, and B, pretty special that you also, for them, get to be a part of their story as they develop this new side of their business. So that's pretty significant.
Yeah, I've been super, super lucky. And it's a good friend that I grew up with that started making snowboards about 15 years ago. And I've been riding those boards for a long time. And after my accident, they were very on board to kind of go down this journey with me. And maybe at the start, we were finding the way, although I loved those original boards and now I'm super happy. I'm staring at one right now. That's why I keep looking over there. It's like, it's so nice. A new one that I just gotten. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a cool journey.
Oh, that's awesome. And how many boards are you typically traveling with to competition? And do you use a different board for snowboard cross than you do bank slalom?
Very different snowboards for snowboard cross and bank slalom. I travel with usually about 6 snowboard cross boards and generally just one bank slalom board because I don't like to say I'm not trying at bank slalom, but I get Noah Elliott, obviously, the American. We just raced last week and I'm like, dude, what am I going to do? He's like 3 seconds in front of me. So I bring my bank slalom board. I've got my favorite bank slalom board and I know it's going to do me well every time, but I can't catch up to these guys. It's kind of crazy.
You did get a podium though in bank slalom at a recent World Cup. So don't sell yourself short.
I just got my first 2 World Cup podiums. They were back to back last week in Austria. The track was very fast, very sketchy, and a little more like a border cross track. So it favored me in a big way, although I still got absolutely smoked by Noah.
Well, he is the best in the world at that event. So
he's so good.
You do got to give it to him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
you know, para snowboard is the newest of the three snow sports to the Paralympic Games, introduced in Sochi in 2014. So this is only going to be the now fourth Paralympics that the entire sport is at. Could you briefly break down for anyone who's going to be watching for the first time, what are the classifications for the men and women's event in bank slalom and border cross?
Yeah, classifications, I think, are probably the biggest thing that confuse folks that are watching the Paralympics, maybe for the first time. But in snowboarding, it's actually really simple. We've got three categories. The upper limb category, which is self-explanatory. That's either amputations or, muscle issues in upper limbs, a weakness in upper limbs. Then there's two lower limb categories, the LL1 and the LL2 category. The LL1 is generally single leg above the knee amputees or very, highly restricted range of motion in your legs. And the LL2 category is single leg below the knee amputee or less, disability impaired in your legs and less impairment in your lower limbs. And to be honest, that's up to the classifiers. I don't know where that level is or the threshold, but there's obviously a line there. And then as a double below the knee amputee, I get added in that LL1 category because I have two prosthetics and it makes sense.
Yeah. So when you watch para snowboard, you'll see you, who's on two prosthetics, competing against someone who might be on a single prosthetic, but theirs is above the knee. So that's one thing I think is interesting about snowboard is there is this range of disabilities within the same classification. So you will see a difference in disability when they're going on the course, but they are in the same category. And so I think that's important to remember that these athletes have gone through this medical process of classification to determine their level of impairment and get placed in said category based on that. Is there anything you feel like is still a big misconception about classification? Or even, since you entered the sport only 5-6 years ago, was there anything that heavily confused you before you entered?
I think snowboarding is really straightforward. Two lower limb categories and one upper limb. The lower limb ones at first confused me a little bit, but they are pretty straightforward. And I think that's kind of an awesome part of snowboarding is that it's a little easier. I am still confused about skiing classifications. I honestly...
Yeah, the factor system. Yeah.
I can't figure it out and I am in that world. So I think I do enjoy that about snowboarding, that it's, upper limb to lower limb. Mm-hmm. Go have at it, first two to cross the finish line. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's one thing that, it makes the para alpine and para cross country skiing as fair as possible, having these factors, but it also can be confusing to the viewer if they don't get those context clues. And so that's really nice about snowboard. And I come from para track and field where everyone was in their own classification, still first to the line scenario, similar to y'all. And I think that is really nice for the viewer who might be a first time Paralympic watcher to see just first to the line or fastest time, none of this percent, because it can be very confusing and it can be difficult. Switching gears real quick. You are one of the co-captains for Team Canada leading into the Milano Cortina Paralympic Games. What is the culture like on the Canadian para snowboard team? And what aspects of team culture do you want to bring to the games as the co-captain?
Oh, that's a great question. Culture wise, it's, let's just say it's super Canadian. I love it. It's all the stereotypes. Here's the thing. All of my competitors are also my best friends. Thoroughly enjoy spending time with everyone, but I love when it's time to race. We race each other, and push each other to the absolute limit. And I'll always say sorry and please. And I think everyone on the team would do the same. Try and be polite, but we're also we're all out there to win a medal. And going to Milan Cortina, I just hope that as a team, we we just stay Canadian, right? Like, I want to live by those ethos that make us Canadian, and take that into Italy, and win with pride, lose with pride, and you know, be show up and give it 100%.
Cut from the cold, baby.
You got it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, yeah, maybe a little
cut ruthless. From the cold.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it.
The birds flock south for the winter, but the Canadians are cut from the cold.
they just stay.
You just stay. Yeah. No heading south for the winter. Oh, that's awesome. And how do you envision para snowboard growing over these next coming game cycles? Do you see more interest in participation from across a variety of different nations? Do you feel like more athletes are reaching this elite level of the sport?
Yeah, I think it's like an ebb and flow with snowboarding. There's been some years it's been less. Right now it's really healthy, which is great to see. And obviously Paralympic year, a lot of people coming out and trying to get that the points up, but I hope to see it continue to grow. I know I'll do all that I can within my country and to try and find more athletes and obviously just exposure around the world. I'm always, the world's so small now with social media that I'm willing to help anyone get out on a snowboard and try and connect them with their local NSO, because yeah, I want to see it keep growing. The challenge is always funding, and snowboarding seems to have a generally low level of funding. So, you know, I can only help where I can, especially within Canada, but hopefully that can improve over the years. And I think with more viewership, more participation, you know, that can only grow. And then on the actual sports side of it, it's happening. Like, the tracks are bigger, the tracks are faster, the skill level's higher. You can look at every single Paralympics. If you watch them back to back, you just see the level of riding, the level of tracks that we are riding. It's growing every time. And I hope that continues here in, Italy. From, you know, early conversations and seeing where the track's going, I think that is going to be true, that the speeds will be higher, the, you know, the technicality will be higher, and you're also going to see the level of riding being higher. The racing is incredibly exciting. It's only getting tighter and tighter every year. You're not seeing one person, you know, 4 or 5 seconds out front with the second person and these big gaps, like seeing racing right to the finish line, you know, pushing, poking your nose forward to get across the finish line first. And, yeah, sometimes you're seeing 4 wide coming across the finish line, which is wildly exciting. And I hope that we continue to see that in Italy and we can just showcase the sport so that we get even more folks showing up and trying it.
And can we expect you to go to French Alps, maybe Salt Lake 34?
Oh, yeah. You know, I haven't really decided what's beyond Italy. I know that it's not a case where I'm going to hang it up and retire. I want to stick around. I want to continue mentoring for sure. I want to continue competing too. I don't think it's going to look the same as it does right now. Chasing crystal globes and full quads. It's pretty brutal and
tough lifestyle.
Yeah. The body's very sore. Snowboard cross is not exactly, you know, soft on your body. Knocked my teeth out last year, and we just had so many injuries in Austria, you know, Japan, China, USA took some pretty serious hits. So it's harder and harder to bounce back, but that doesn't mean I'm going anywhere. I just maybe change the approach a little bit, because it's getting harder and harder every year. But then you look at, hey, look at Mike Schultz. He's still right on top of his game. And there's some people who are still doing it at an extremely high level that, you know, are a little older than me and make it seem possible. So who knows? We'll see how it all goes here in Italy.
And you look on the Olympic side too. Nick Baumgartner is still out there trying to get his Olympic spot too.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Where there's a will, there's a way. I don't know how much longer the whale can survive. It's like, it's intense. It's the snowboard cross is the highest of highs, the lowest of lows. Like it's any sport, that feeling of winning, crossing the line first and overcoming, it's incredible. But then the disappointment, the pain, the injuries and everything, it tests you and it's a roller coaster. So, my heart can only handle so much, and we'll see what the next quad looks like, but I'm definitely not going anywhere.
And I think that's something about racing sports in particular. Like, I grew up playing ball sports and always having a team surrounded by you, mm-hmm. and having like the wins and the losses kind of shared amongst the group. But once you get into racing sports where it's really you against the clock or just you against the field, it is this different level of, you know, emotional burden almost that comes with it, because the only time, you know, when it's you versus the clock, like, yes, there's going to be changes on the course and we can't control what our competition is doing. But at the end of the day, it's you versus that clock. And there is something that's so vulnerable about that. And you put so much into it that then whether, you know, even sometimes when it goes well, you have so much emotion tied to the performance because it's just you out there doing this thing that you've spent a lot of time trying to perfect. And it's challenging. And I kind of agree that like the heart maybe can't handle it for that much longer. Yeah. And it's easy to, you know, feel the lows really low and the highs really high. But I find that people who can last the longest in the sport kind of ride that more middle ground where they don't feel the wins or the really good races quite as high, but they also don't feel the bad races quite as low, and that kind of helps sustain them. And that's not how my emotions work personally.
Yeah, it's not me. Nothing in moderation. I run I run hot, I run full throttle. So the things that I choose to participate in, the sports and activities, don't really allow for that moderation. So
you're still jumping out of planes and doing stuff.
I mean, that's just my way to relax and calm it all down. I gotta jump out of airplanes to keep things calm.
Oh my God, crazy. So with Milano Cortina coming up, we've talked a bit about, you know, the actual development of the sport of snowboarding. We've been in this Paralympic game for actually pretty similar timelines, 5-6 years. How do you think the media space can still grow around the Paralympics specifically?
Well, even in the short 5-6 years, I've been seeing it grow, which is really cool. I've been lucky enough to kind of be involved in a part of it, which has just been a lot of fun because it's not something I was used to before. But it's awesome to see more exposure, prime time, Paralympics getting on, I believe in the States, NBC, in Canada, CBC. It's really awesome to see, but it's definitely short of where it could get to. In a World Cup season, we have zero World Cups streamed live or filmed at all. Live timing is the best way for any family. My wife had never seen me race until last season because besides the Paralympics in Beijing, mm-hmm. our World Championships, our World Cups are not exposed. So the more that the sport can be exposed to viewers, the more it'll grow. And I think obviously there's a difficult to, it all takes money and everything, but I think there's Parasport is in a good place, but it can be in a way better place. There's lots of room left to grow.
I totally agree, and it has gotten better just in the short time we've been in the sport. And you know, mm-hmm. I hear the stories from like the early 2000s or the 90s about people were still having to fundraise like their plane ticket to get to the Paralympics because they were getting such little sports maybe from their NPCs. And mm-hmm. it is in such a good place. And I personally believe that the place that we can get to soon, we can get to faster if we have our Olympic counterparts in particularly the similar sports that we compete in be our fans. Like if we mm-hmm. can get the Olympic cross country skiers or the Olympic snowboard team to show up and watch us or, you know, on their off days, try to tune in like we probably are for their competitions, I think their support could help elevate para to a new level too.
Of course. And for para snowboard, we just need to even have an opportunity for anyone to watch it. There is no way to follow along. There's no way to watch it. We're our own little bubble that travels around the world. And with really high level, really exciting competition. And I think if that could get out there and, you know, even just on YouTube, there's just a way for someone to see it. It's it's only going to grow more. Myself sitting in a hospital bed. Like I said, I didn't know about para snowboard really. I knew it was a thing. I'd never seen it. The only two things that I was able to find online when I was laying in a hospital bed was Sochi and Pyeongchang. And even then, it's not easy to find. And so, yeah, how are you going to – I'm a diehard, passionate snowboarder, and I'm struggling to find information on it. So your recreational snowboarder probably doesn't even know that it's a thing. So the more exposure, the more we can get it out there. And I think the dream would be to have it streamed somehow, showing our races out there so that people can tune in, and that'll only build more excitement and desire for people to join.
Totally. How can you be a fan of something that you can't watch?
Totally. Social media right now, we're all trying to keep it out there and get it out there as much as possible. But it needs to get further.
Totally. Well, Tyler, thank you so much. And we are so excited at FIS. I'm so excited to watch you in Milano Cortina when the Paralympics start on March 6th. I really do wish you the best, but I do hope Noah Elliott kicks your ass
in Bank Slalom. You know what? That's okay. If I could get second behind Noah in Bank Slalom, it would be a good competition. I would be over the moon. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, Danny. Thanks for doing this and bringing some more exposure.
Tyler Turner, the best athlete you've never heard of. Hidden Champions is a FIS original production by FIS, the International Ski and Snowboard Federation, in partnership with Maniac Studios.